journey into a world that is just beyond our comprehension. The world of the paranormal.
Welcome to the 13 Skulls. Today we're going to be taking a look at two new geoglyphs are found in Nazca, some creepy portraits from the past, a military base in Utah went on lockdown due to either a missing nerve agent or a gamma ray burst, strange footprints with three clawed toes, a black substance spews out of the earth and causes a panic, and 32% of Russians think the sun revolves around the earth. So stay tuned for that and much more in this 53rd episode of the 13 Skulls. Welcome back, everybody. I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. First things first, I apologize for it being so long in between the shows coming out. I came down with a really bad bout of the flu. I've had it now for about 13 days. You can probably tell my voice is a little bit rough right now. I've been hacking and coughing and wheezing and not feeling great for the past 2 weeks. And it's been kicking my butt, which is why I haven't been able to get the show out. I was going to get the show out 2 weekends ago, and the flu kicked my butt, and I just wasn't able to do it. Last weekend, I was even worse off, but I'm feeling a lot better now, so we want to go ahead and get on with the formalities, get them buried in the dirt and out of the way. If you have an experience or feedback to share, email me at the13skulls@gmail.com or info@the13skulls.com, or you can call in and tell me your feedback, criticisms, or whatever. The phone numbers are 206-338-2205 or 817-986-0019. There will be quite a lot of UFO sightings from ufoclearinghouse.webs.com that I will link to in the show notes at the13skulls.com. If you like reading about UFO sightings from just average everyday people like you and me, then it's a great place to go and check them out. If you like the music that's in the show, it's courtesy of the IOTA PromoNet at www.iotaalliance.com. There will be links in the show notes to download them or links to go buy the entire album if you like the music that much. I will provide links to everything you hear about in the show notes. If you have a podcast, radio show, book, or anything at all, and you want to swap promos or just have it promoted in this show, email me. I'd love to be able to put it in there. If you want a button or magnet, email me with your name and an address for me to be able to ship it to, and I will get one out to you ASAP. If you have any interest in movies, comic books, TV shows, anything like that, go to Jeremy's News and Reviews at jeremyba.com. For your graphic design needs, anything that you want that's graphically computer generated, you can get a hold of Anthony at rampromos@aol.com. And to get things going, I have decided to go ahead and start up a premium version of the show. It is $5 a month. You'll get 4 episodes a month. You'll get 1 episode every week. You'll get extended versions of the regular free show that comes out every other week. You'll also get full extended versions of the show every other week that the free show's not coming out. So that's only $5. $5 for, God, going on maybe 6 hours worth of entertainment. So it's a really good deal, I believe. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to get it going. It's already up by the time you guys are hearing this. All you have to do is go to premium.the13skulls.com, sign up. Again, it's only $5. You'll get a whole bunch of content, more so than what is in the regular free show. Compared to what other shows are putting out there for the price that they're putting out there, I think this is a really good deal. With this show, you'll get a free show every other week like you always have. That's not going away. What I'm doing is I'm adding on a premium version of the show. So whenever the free show comes out, the premium version will be an extended version of that. And then the weeks that the free show doesn't come out, you'll get an extended long version of the show that normally you wouldn't get if it was just with the free stuff. So go to premium.the13skulls.com and sign up. It's only $5 a month. I don't think you can beat that. I think it's a great deal. So if you guys want to support this show and keep it going and have it only get better from here on out, please do so. Go sign up, support this show, and keep it going. So you guys and gals, I really appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. Let's go ahead and bury all this in the dirt and get on with the show. All right, well, the first thing that I wanted to do was take a look at an email that I got from Marie. She says, "Hello, TJ. I had this experience one night when I was in college. I'll start by saying that a few days or maybe weeks before this happened, I noticed I was waking up at the same time every night. It wasn't because of nightmares or recurring dreams. I would just wake up for no reason, and it was always at 3:14 a.m. That night I woke up, rolled over, and looked at the clock, and once again it was 3:14. I shrugged it off, closed my eyes, and tried to go back to sleep. A few minutes later, I heard shuffling coming from behind me around where my roommate's bed was. I didn't see any of this because I usually slept with my back to her facing the door. I heard the shuffling coming closer to me and figured my roommate was going to the bathroom. But instead of heading out of the door, the steps came to my bed, and I felt someone sit down behind me. At first, I was amused because I figured my roommate was sleepwalking, but when I started to get up to guide her back to the bed, I couldn't move. And I felt the person lay down behind me and drape an arm over me. This person or thing was so close to me that I could feel breathing on the back of my neck. I was terrified at this point, and I think I remember it saying something to me, but I guess I was too scared to pay attention. I tried to move, but I couldn't. I tried to scream, but only whimpers came out. Common night terror stuff, but I kept trying. I finally made a sound that was somewhat loud, and that's when everything ended. I felt it take its arm off of me and get out of the bed. I could move again, so I sat right up and looked around. Everything was normal. My roommate was even still sleeping. I was surprised the noise I made didn't wake her up. I was still terrified, and I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep again. I didn't really want to go to sleep again. I also didn't want to wake my roommate, so I spent the rest of the night in the common area where there were plenty of lights around and I could think about what the hell just happened. That was the first time. Since then, I've had a couple of other experiences just like this. Nothing bad ever really happened. I'd just get one hell of a scare. I also never got the feeling that anything was there to harm me. And they all started the same way. I'd hear footsteps coming towards me while I'm laying down about to go to sleep. The last time it happened, I started resisting as soon as I heard the footsteps. I said, or thought loudly, "No, no, go away." And it was interesting because the communication I got back from whatever it was, "But I have to." Another interesting time, I heard the footsteps coming towards me, and the mental image I had was of a being that looked like the Greek god Pan. I couldn't see the top, but its lower half was goat legs and hooves. Because of this and other things, it's now my habit to sleep with the lights and the TV on. I'm guessing it's the late night infomercials that keep the spirits away. Thanks again, Marie. Wow, Marie, thank you so much for sending that in. I really do appreciate you sharing that experience with me. The god Pan was really quite interesting with the goat legs and hooves. Now, the footsteps that you were hearing, I'm wondering if, did they sound like hooved feet that were walking on the floor? I'm wondering if you have carpet or hardwood, what kind of sound this would have made, because it was obviously apparent enough for you to notice it, and you know, whenever you were trying to go to sleep. It's just a really interesting experience. And the fact that you got a response back saying that it had to was really rather odd. I'm trying to wonder why it would have had to have laid down next to you. What would have been the reason for it? Was it just trying to protect you, maybe? You know, the Greek god Pan wasn't anything evil that I know of, but to know that you didn't get any feelings of it, you know, being malevolent or anything that it was going to harm you, that it didn't wake up your roommate. I mean, maybe it was a night terror, but either way, it was just really, really interesting. And thank you so much, Marie, for sharing. I really do appreciate it. All right, well, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at was sent in to me by Rojan, who said that his daughter, Chloe, was the one who found this and wanted to send it into the show. So thank you very much, Chloe. I really do appreciate you finding this and sending it in. I thought it was great stuff. It's Dinosaur, Colorado. And it's actually a town in Colorado called Dinosaur. And it has some really interesting street names, Tyrannosaurus Street, Stegosaurus Freeway, Brachiosaurus Street, Entrotomus Alley, and Triceratops Terrace. I thought it was really interesting. There is a Google Maps image for you to go and take a look at that I'll provide to you in the show notes, so you can go and take a look at Dinosaur, Colorado. And thank you very much, Chloe, for sending this in. I would love to visit this place. There is a street view, and it just looks like just a little town in the middle of Colorado in the kind of desert country. Thank you very much, Chloe. I really do appreciate you thinking of me, thinking of this show, and wanting to share something like this. It's just really interesting to know that they would come up with a place like this and name all the streets, much less the town, after dinosaurs. So thank you again, Chloe. I really do appreciate it. Let's go ahead and move on to the next thing that I wanted to do, which was take a look at a story that was sent to me, and it's a true story that was sent to me by Rojan. He came across a book entitled Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, The World's Gone Crazy. He said that he really wanted to put this into the show, and as soon as he sent it to me, I knew it was perfect for it. It says, one of the pioneering bands of black metal was an Oslo band called Mayhem. Formed in 1984, the original lineup consisted of guitarist and vocalist Øystein Aarseth. Now, these are all really hard names to pronounce, so I'm going to probably butcher them. But Øystein Aarseth, also known as Euronymous, bassist Jorn Stubberud, or Necro Butcher, and drummer Kjetil Mannheim. After going through a few singers, Messiah and Maniac, Mayhem was joined by Swedish vocalist Per Egev Olin, who adopted the nickname Dead. Dead was the quintessential black metal singer. He buried his clothes for weeks underground to give them a quote-unquote grave scent. He slashed his own skin during performances, and for inspiration, he inhaled rancid air from a plastic bag containing the decomposed remains of a crow. In 1990, Dead and the rest of Mayhem moved into a house together to work on their first full-length album, De Mysterious Dom Satanas, a Latin phrase that loosely translates to Lord Satan's Secret Rites. Life in the Mayhem house was as intense as the music. Dead, who continually battled depression, didn't get along with Euronymous, and on April 8th of 1991, Euronymous came home to find Dead dead, with slit wrists and a gunshot wound to the head. Next to him was a suicide note that read, "Please excuse all the blood." Before calling the police, however, Euronymous ran to the store and bought an instant camera, and then photographed Dead's body in a variety of positions. One of the photos found its way onto the cover of Mayhem's bootleg album, Dawn of the Black Hearts. According to the legend, Euronymous also kept chunks of dead scattered brain and mixed them into a stew, and used bone fragments from his skull to make necklaces that he gave to musicians whom he deemed worthy. The well-publicized tragedy gave a huge boost not only to Mayhem's popularity, but to all of black metal. People became aware of us after that, said Necro Butcher, the bassist. It really changed the scene. But the scene became too much for Necro Butcher to handle, and he soon quit the band. But Mayhem lived on, at least for a while. Singer Attila Sahar took over for Dead, while Varg Vikarns, Count Grishnok, named after a Lord of the Rings villain, stepped in on bass. But once again, there was trouble in the band. Count Grishnok, who suffered from paranoid delusions, became convinced that Euronymous was secretly conspiring to torture and kill him. On August 10th of 1993, less than a year after joining the band, Grishnok went to Euronymous's apartment and stabbed him 23 times. The ensuing murder trial put Mayhem in the news once again. And the trial revealed that not only did the bassist kill the guitarist, but he was also responsible for a spate of infamous church burnings that plagued Norway for the past few years. He was sentenced to 21 years in prison, and he was released on parole 15 years later in 2009. It seemed that with two members dead and one in jail, Mayhem would never rock again. Not so. In 1995, Hellhammer got a lineup together to start anew. This time, guitarist Rune Blasphemer Eriksson and original member Sven Erik Maniac Christensen on vocals. He even lured Necro Butcher out of retirement to play bass. Soon after Mayhem finally released De Mysterious Dom Christensen, an album that had been stalled amidst all of Mayhem's mayhem. That was followed by two albums. Mayhem was back in business and are now a bona fide legend in the black metal world. But in 2003, the band made headlines once again. During a show in Norway, Maniac was cutting up a dead sheep on stage, a ritual that had become a regular part of their act when its head somehow catapulted into the crowd, hitting 25-year-old Per Christian Hagen. The sheep's head knocked the young man to the floor, and he ended up with a fractured skull. Hagen filed assault charges against Mayhem. The whole thing was an accident, claimed Blasphemer, although he added, but maybe it would be an idea for another show. In the end, Hagen dropped the charges and the band had weathered yet another storm. With the band members now in their 40s, Mayhem is still at it. They made the news again in 2009 when they were arrested for trashing a hotel room in the Netherlands. They don't expect everyone to like their music and they don't want to be thought of as a gimmick. Wow, man. I mean, that's just a crazy, crazy story. To be honest with you, I had heard of Mayhem before, I believe. I couldn't tell you any songs or music or anything like that. I'm not really into the black metal. I like heavy metal, but I'm not really into the black metal too much. You know, I'm not really into this whole Satanist thing at all. So, you know, I can't say that I really knew who they were. I know I'd just heard of them before, but man, that is just crazy. People killing each other, Necro Butcher, Messiah, Maniac, Euronymous, all these strange, crazy names. People burying their clothes to give them a sin of being in the grave, you know, cutting themselves, you know. Is it more shock rock than it is anything else? Or do these guys actually believe what they're doing? I mean, they're just crazy, man. That was just a wild, wild story. Thank you so much for sharing, Rojan. I really appreciate you taking the time out to type that all out because, you know, reading a book and, you know, copying and pasting is one thing. Reading a book and then typing it all out, you know, is something else. So thanks for taking the time out to do that, man. It was really quite a great story.
Report the level of the mysterious radiation continues to increase steadily. So long as this situation remains, government spokesmen warn that dead bodies will continue to be transformed into the flesh-eating ghouls. All persons who die during this crisis, from whatever cause, will come back to life to seek human victims unless their bodies are first disposed of by cremation.
Are you ready for the zombie apocalypse? Maybe you should check out the Zombie Research Society. Founded in 2007, the Zombie Research Society is dedicated to raising zombie awareness in the fields of science, survival, and culture. Become a member of ZRS and let your voice be heard. The life you save could be your own. Remember, what you don't know can eat you.
Log in to zombieresearch.org for more information.
My name is X246ZY7 from the planet Dotopia. And when I'm in your rather primitive solar system, I go to paranormalpodcast.com and set my podcast aggregator to Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold. Finally, a show about me.
Well, sort of. At Paranormal Podcast, we interview authors and experts from around the world about everything from UFOs and ghosts to the existence of life after death. Are crop circles real? Is there scientific explanations for the Bermuda Triangle phenomena? Learn this and so much more on the Paranormal Podcast. Now, we take our subject matter seriously, but we have fun too. Even skeptics are welcome. So please subscribe. It's free. You can find us at Podcast Alley, the iTunes Music Store, or at ParanormalPodcast.com. Take a listen. Open your mind.
Are you troubled by irregularity? Then listen to Access Denied, Humans Defective. 9 out of 10 doctors say, you'll yourself every time. Access Denied, Humans Defective. Download it from iTunes or directly from the show website at accessdeniedradio.com.
Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is just a site that I wanted to point you guys in the direction of. It's called aircrap.org. Now, I know it sounds a bit weird, but they are monitoring the planned poisoning of humanity. Now, there's a lot of people out there that say that chemtrails are something that the government or some, you know, the military or somebody is putting into the air, that they are something that is coming out, you know, a chemical coming out of a plane as it flies over. Now, this website will keep a track of death tolls, evidence, health impacts, chemtrail news, chemtrail photos, videos of chemtrails, some of the aerial toxins that are supposedly put into these, these supposed chemtrails. You know, you really can't tell what they are because the average everyday person isn't going to be able to go up and take a sample of a chemtrail to know exactly what it is. Now, there are some significances to, you know, whenever you see a whole bunch of them, and then, you know, the weather changes or people start getting a little bit more sick. But anyway, I thought it was an interesting article or an interesting website that I wanted you guys to go take a look at. It's aircrap.org. Now, the next thing that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of paleofuture.com. And it was something that was sent to me. I think Rogan sent it to me, but I'm not positive. It was Edison's predictions for the future in the year of 2011, and I believe maybe it actually might have been Fabiano that sent this to me. It was really interesting. One of the books that I really truly enjoyed listening to and reading was 1984, and to see what people think of the future and what it's going to be is really, it's always been an interesting thing for me. So I thought this article was really interesting. It says that on June 23rd of 1911, the Miami Metropolis published predictions about the year 2011 from the one and only Thomas Edison. Edison makes some amazing predictions about a future of golden automobiles, the discontinuation of gold as a currency, the rise of steel, and the death of the steam engine. It's really interesting. The article says, this is what the article says. What will the world be 100 years hence? None but a wizard dare raise the curtain and disclose the secrets of the future. And what wizard can do with it so sure a hand as Thomas Edison, who also wrested so many secrets from jealous nature? He alone, of all men who live in the necessary courage and gift of foresight, and he has not shrunk from the venture. Already, Mr. Edison tells us the steam engine is emitting its last gasp. A century hence, it will be as remote as antiquity as the lumbering coach of Tudor days, which took a week of travel from Yorkshire to London. The year 2011, such railway trains as Survive will be driven at incredible speed by electricity generated by hydraulic wheels. But the traveler of the future will largely scorn such earth crawling. He will fly through the air swifter than any swallow at a speed of 200 miles per hour in colossal machines, which will enable him to breakfast in London, transact business in Paris, and eat his lunch in Cheapside. The house of the next century will be furnished from basement to attic with steel, of steel so light that it will be as easy to move a sideboard as it is today to lift a drawing room chair. The baby of the 21st century will be rocked in a steel cradle. His father will sit in a steel chair at a steel dining table, and his mother's boudoir will be sumptuously equipped with steel furnishings, converted by cunning varnishes to the semblances of rosewood or mahogany or any other wood her ladyship fancies, but yet still made out of steel. Books of the coming century will all be printed leaves of nickel, so light to hold that the reader can enjoy a small library in a single volume. A book 2 inches thick will contain 40,000 pages, the equivalent of 100 volumes. 6 inches in aggregate thickness, it would suffice for all the contents of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and each volume would weigh less than a pound. Now, would in a way this thing that he's talking about as far as the way books would be, do you think maybe possibly he could have, you know, been thinking more about like an iPad or a Kindle, maybe? I don't know. And it's interesting how far off he really was. He also goes on to say that it will be easy to convert a truckload of iron bars into as many bars of virgin gold. In the magical days to come, there is no reason why our great liners should not be made of gold from stern to stern. Now, great liners, he would be talking about ships. Why we would not ride in golden taxicabs or substituted gold for steel in our drawing room suites. Only steel will be the more durable and thus the cheaper in the long run. Now, steel is cheaper, but gold did not become our taxicabs or anything along those lines. I mean, yeah, I can maybe see how he would be right in certain ways because there are certain things in this world that are made of gold that are quite a bit better off than what you could make out of steel, because steel is, you know, it's an easy material to work with, really. I've worked with metals before, so I know a little bit about it. You know, gold is quite a bit more malleable than steel is, but, you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, we don't have golden taxicabs and we don't have 40,000 pages in a book that's 2 inches thick. But I still thought it was interesting because I love to see how it is that people think of what the future is going to be. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. And it's a really interesting thing because they are coming up with a wine that is made from snake venom and scorpions. It says, forget eating the worm after downing your tequila. With the bottles of unusual wine produced in Vietnam, a tasty tipple comes with a far more potent bite. A village there is producing snake and scorpion wine and shipping it worldwide with the rare beverage available to order online. The venomous cobra snake is used to make the snake wine, but the poison is canceled out by the alcoholic content of the drink, meaning that you can avoid a pounding hangover. Similarly, months of fermenting means the dead scorpion encased in yellow bottles doesn't have the same sting as the tail. You don't really have to worry about that. The pictures here are really interesting because they're bottles of wine, but yet inside these are the snakes and the scorpions themselves. They've actually put them inside of the bottles. And you can go and see one of them here. They're really, really neat. I would like to have one just to have it. You know, I wouldn't drink it. You know, I might take a sip. I don't know. You never know. It might be pretty good. But I definitely want you guys to go take a look at these pictures. They're really, really wild. I mean, first they have to put these snakes and these scorpions inside the bottles, which is interesting enough in itself. But just to see that they're doing it and that people are actually drinking it is just really wild. So let's go ahead and move on to the next article, which is courtesy of ghosttheory.com. And it's just retro creepy portraits from the past. They're really, really creepy, y'all. You've got to go see this. They're creepy clown pictures, these weird pictures of these kids with these outfits on that look like devils. They have horns on them. These really odd, depressing, creepy, strange photos. I mean, some of these are just, I mean, I can't even really describe them, how creepy they are. I mean, one of them is just this black and white picture of this guy looking at you. He sort of looks like a zombie with a hat on, but it's just really strange. Another one is just weird Easter rabbit looking Easter bunny holding a baby, but it's like evil looking. I mean, some creepy kids dressed as clowns, some really quite strange goat-headed figures. I really want you to go take a look at these. I mean, the images that are in here, you know, they're some images that are creepier than that of a demon-possessed child or zombie. You know, they're family and old-school portraits. You know, it just makes me wonder, you know, what the people were thinking whenever they took the picture. I don't really understand. I mean, I guess some of them are Halloween pictures. You know, one of them is supposedly of a guy that is, you know, levitating off of a chair. I don't know. They're really bizarre. You know, they're almost resembling the Victorian death photos, but they're not really pictures of people who are dead. They're just really creepy, especially the Easter Bunny ones, the rabbit ones, and the little kids dressed as clowns, man. I mean, super creepy. I want you guys to go take a look at it. Again, I'll post links up to it in the show notes so you guys can go and, you know, see everything that I'm talking about. And I believe Miles sent me that one, so thank you again, Miles. I really do appreciate it. The next article is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk. And if for anybody else who knows anything about like classical kind of music, Chopin, he was a really good pianist. He was haunted by terrifying visions throughout his career and believed that strange creatures were crawling out of his piano. Scientists believe there is a medical explanation for the composer's torment. Frederick Chopin, I believe that's how it's pronounced, regularly suffered through hallucinations, and his frailty and bouts of melancholy had been put down to bipolar disorder or clinical depression. But the disturbing images he saw were caused by epilepsy, according to lead author Dr. Manuel Vasquez Caruncho. But they're saying that Chopin often appeared wild-eyed with his hair on end, spoke of a cohort of phantoms tormenting him, and once described a monastery where he had stayed as full of terrors and ghosts. Plagued by poor health and dying of lung disease at the age of 39 in 1849, he became the epitome of the romantic artist. But now research in the journal Medical Humanities suggests that temporal lobe epilepsy, which can produce complex but brief hallucinations, are likely the cause for his visions. The team drew on correspondence written by the musician and accounts of his behavior, including an episode in 1848 which saw him leave the stage midway through a performance of his sonata in B-flat minor without explanation. He later wrote to the daughter of George Sand and told how he had seen creatures emerging from his piano, forcing him to leave the room. In her memoirs, George Sand recalled his vivid descriptions of his visions. The research authors say it is impossible to make a concrete diagnosis, but right, a condition such as that described in the article could easily have been overlooked by his doctors. The authors say schizophrenia is less likely of an explanation, as hallucinations caused by this disorder are usually auditory, and also rule out a migraine because of Chopin's age and the briefness of his visions. And although he did dabble with laudanum, which I'm not really sure what that is, to treat his physical treatment, the type of hallucination associated with the opiate do not correspond with what Chopin suffered. They say that Chopin also experienced the symptoms of anxiety, fear, and insomnia that can precede epileptic episodes. Tragically, the condition was far better understood 25 years after his death. It's just really interesting to know that someone who is so talented as to play the piano, I mean, I'm sorry, but if anybody out there knows anything about music, the piano is an extremely hard instrument to play. You know, it requires both feet and both hands to be able to play. And, you know, just like the drums. Drums are really hard, but the piano is super hard. And you have to be really intelligent, I think, and really talented to be able to play the piano. But just to know that he would see visions of demons or phantoms coming out of his piano is just really wild. And, you know, who's to say whether or not he was actually seeing them? You know, I mean, it was obviously real to him. I would like to know whether or not he thought they were real or if he knew they were some kind of a hallucination. You know, people see things like this. I mean, I've seen some strange things in my life, too. I've never really seen a demon that I'm aware of. I mean, I could have, but I'm not positive. I don't remember seeing anything that looked like the devil, but it's really interesting. And I just wonder whether or not something that he was fully aware of as something that he was experiencing, other than the fact that he saw them. And speaking of something being really interesting, I saw a review in iTunes that somebody said they were wondering if I got paid for, you know, a dollar every time I said, that I found it really interesting. Sorry, I do. I find things really interesting, and I apologize for that. But let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break here, you guys. When we come back, we'll be taking a look at some anomalies on Mars. A military base in Utah went on lockdown, and I'm not really sure why. It was either due to a gamma ray burst or something really strange. I don't really know. We're also going to be taking a look at new protocols for calling ET. So let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break, and we'll be back here in just a minute. I am the warrior with the broken sword. I am a slave with the fear of his lord. There's no chance I'll live for fate from life. God has made fate for me. I have been destined. Welcome back, everybody. I want to introduce to you a new segment that we're going to be playing in the show called Anomalous. And it's from Rogan in Detroit. He is recording a new segment for the show. Let's go ahead and take it away, Rogan.
Greetings, everyone. This is Rogan. Welcome to Anomalous. Tonight, we'll be talking about the Lake Worth Monster from Fort Worth, Texas. The following information can be found at bigfootencounters.com/articles/lakeworth.html. Some said it was a really big bobcat. Others said it was an ape that had been horribly burned in a circus fire. It all happened on Greer Island, a part of a Fort Worth Nature Center and Refuge. Reporter Jim Mars broke the story in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on July 10, 1969. It ran on two pages with the headlines, "Fishy Man-Goat Terrifies Couple Parked at Lake Worth." It's hard for me to say that without even laughing. It made the front page the next day. "Police, residents observe, but can't identify monster," the headline read. There were more headlines throughout the week. "Lake Worth Monster reportedly furry and scaly and ghost seen on Greer Island." The monster was described as having a short humanoid body with a long neck. It had the head of a dog or a goat and a horn in the middle of its forehead. Some witnesses described it as a satyr. In her book, The Lake Worth Monster, author Sally Ann Clark recalls a personal close encounter. "It was not a bobcat, nor was it a sheepskin. It wasn't a person dressed in a Halloween costume. It really was a terrorizing monster. It stood on its hind feet and ran like a man. It had white hair on most of its body and scales, too. It was a goat fish man. I'm sure it stood 6 feet high and 9 inches tall and was undressed. It looked like it weighed 250 to 260 pounds," she wrote. Clark also said reports of sheep being horribly mangled. Sally said they had their necks and heads crushed. Their chins were lying in the middle of their backs. They looked like something had just ripped them apart. Nature Center Director Wayne Clark said, "We still have little kids on occasion who say they heard about the Lake Worth Monster or ask, 'Is there a goat man out here?'" Wayne recalls, "I remember when all that was going on. There were a number of old parking lots, and the kids used to throw keg parties. They were a pretty well-behaved group, but they would party. Then supposedly some creature showed up, started yelling, and threw tires like frisbees. From what I heard, it was like total panic with everybody running into each other and burning rubber trying to get out of there." Mars stated in a recent interview that stories floating around the police department said some teenage pranksters at Brewer High School in a white settlement were behind the monster. They had found an old gorilla suit and wore a clear plastic mask to give the impression of glowing. Mars also stated that it was rumored that the kids promised to retire their monster to avoid prosecution, so nothing official ever came of it, and that leaves the Lake Worth monster free to keep roaming through legend. Still, there is no explanation for the mangled sheep or how a tire could be tossed 500 feet like a frisbee. Back at the Nature Center, Wayne Clark said there is no proof that the monster doesn't exist, and we have heard strange noises, he said. Sally Ann Clark, at the close of her book, urges caution. Sally writes, "Is he still running loose? I can assure you if you want to see or hear about it, take a long, quiet ride around Lake Worth some dark night. But don't go alone. It's too scary out there."
All right. Well, thank you a lot, Rojan. I really do appreciate it, man. Great job on that. Now, I have heard a lot about the Lake Worth monster living here in Fort Worth. There have been quite a few instances where people have brought it up to me, and I don't live too far away from Lake Worth as it is from right here, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, something like that. It's not too far away, but I haven't ever heard of it being described as like a fishy goat man of some kind. It's really interesting. I thought it was a really fascinating story. And I really appreciate you sending that to me, Rojan. From now on, we will be putting that stuff into the show. He's got a couple of other stories that he's going to be, you know, putting into later on shows, you know, from here on out. I just thought it was a great addition to the show. And thank you, Rojan. I really appreciate the work and the effort that you've put in for that. All right, well, the next thing that I want to take a look at is courtesy of blogs.abc.net.au. It's just a really strange thing. It's not very long. A wooden block was found on top of an iceberg. The block of wood ended up on top of an iceberg in the Southern Ocean, which I'm trying to see where that is. The lonely piece of timber was spotted on top of a small berg at 66 degrees south, just north of Commonwealth Bay. Wildlife watchers near Aurora Australis's bridge first thought it was a relaxing seal, but it was soon apparent that it was a rectangular box. How it got to such a prominent position instead of just floating around is anyone's guess. Since it's lifeless and non-magnetic, its baffling position won't be due to the fact that we were very close to the South Magnetic Pole. Normal compasses don't work in this region, and the South Magnetic Pole was positioned in the Antarctic continent 100 years ago, and they're not really sure where this box came from, and there's a couple of pictures there that you can go and take a look at. And it's just this, maybe, I don't know, it's kind of hard to get any type of real idea of the size of this thing, but it's, you know, a few inches tall, a few more inches wide, and quite, you know, it's rectangular in shape. And nobody's really sure how it got there. I'm wondering how it got there. I mean, maybe it floated underneath the bridge that they were on and someone dropped it off of the bridge onto it. That would be my guess. Passing boat, I don't know if you would really want to even get too close to this thing. I mean, given what happened to the Titanic and icebergs can sink ships, I wouldn't think that you would want to get that close. I don't think anybody would have gotten on top of it, but it's really strange. I want you guys to go take a look at the block of wood that was found on top of an iceberg. Really quite strange. The next thing that I wanted to take a look at were some Mars anomaly pictures courtesy of paranormal.about.com. And I believe Miles was the one who sent this in. It says that ancient man began tracking the unique red world across the night sky, and we've always known that there is something special about Mars. Mars is the most Earth-like planet in the solar system, bearing many similar geological features, including polar ice caps and what appear to be ancient, but now dry, riverbeds. But is there life on Mars? Despite the controversy surrounding Mars meteorites that some scientists think contain fossils of ancient Martian bacteria-like life forms, there is no conclusive evidence that life currently ever existed on Mars. There is a gallery here of 16 pictures that you can go and take a look at. And some of them are really strange. Like, there are supposedly pyramids on Mars that resemble the Giza pyramids, the Great Pyramid of Giza. Some of them look like glass tubes or even trees on Mars. Some of them actually look like fields of shrubs. or a valley of boulders in the middle of a desert, a golf ball type of crater, which the crater I can kind of see, you know, if a piece of rock coming from space just went in at the right 90-degree angle and just, it didn't skim, it didn't bust apart, it just plowed right in and stuck there like a piece of spaghetti to a wall. It's just, it's really wild to see some of these pictures because they really truly do look as if they are real plants, real trees, real shrubs on this planet. And some of them actually look like monoliths too. Now, granted, it could just be a very tall piece of rock. It could be anything. I mean, there's one here that's even saying that it could possibly even be a cricket. Now, is it? I don't know. I'm not positive. I don't think so. There is something there that moves in a picture that is taken from one of the Mars rovers. It's just a really interesting grouping of pictures. I want you guys to go take a look at them and let me know if you think that maybe some of this stuff that's on Mars actually is of some kind of life form or evidence of some kind of ancient life on Mars of some kind that could have possibly even built a pyramid on Mars. It was really, really strange. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of Forbes.com and another one that is courtesy of BeforeIt'sNews.com. Now, a military base in Utah was on lockdown for just a few hours, and this one article from Forbes.com is saying that the Dugway Proving Grounds, where military weapons are tested, has finally been reopened after a serious concern. Army Post spokeswoman Paula Thomas says personnel were allowed to enter early Thursday and people inside were allowed to leave shortly after that. Post Command Colonel William E. King late on Wednesday announced that the gates were locked down both incoming and outgoing personnel, saying that there was a serious concern but that no one was in danger. Officials did not say what triggered the lockdown at 5:24 p.m., but some are saying that it was a release of nerve gas or missing nerve gas that they were trying to find that no one knows where it possibly was. Now, they're not really saying here that, you know, it was a serious concern or anything like that. But why would you lock down an entire base if there's really nothing serious going on? I would think that you would, you know, have something serious if you're going to lock down an entire base of people coming in or going out. Something was missing. Something happened. And they're not really saying what. Now, the BeforeIt'sNews.com website is saying that it's an Atlantis anomaly is causing the shutdown of this base. They're basically saying that it was a gamma ray burst. They're saying that Russian Space Forces report circulating in the Kremlin says that the Cosmos 2469 satellites currently in orbit over North America have detected a gamma ray burst of unprecedented proportions emanating from the Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah. According to the report, since the formation of what is described as a magnetic vortex began appearing in the Gulf of Aden, a growing number of gamma ray bursts emanating from beneath our Earth and its seas and directed towards the Sirius star system have been detected and have given rise to the belief of many Russian scientists that they belong to an ancient early warning system of some type. One of the largest of these gamma ray bursts was detected coming from the seas off of Florida coast in an area long believed to have once been part of the lost continent of Atlantis, described by the classic Greek philosopher and mathematician Plato as being a naval power lying in front of the Pillars of Hercules that conquered many parts of Western Europe and Africa 9,000 years before the time of Solon, approximately 9600 BC. Unlike other locations around the Earth where these gamma ray bursts have been detected, however, the anomaly generating them off of the Florida coast was in relatively shallow waters, estimated at no more than 500 meters under the sea, which this past week the United States Navy began one of their largest operations ever to recover. Now, according to this report, the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, issued an unprecedented warning to all pilots flying over the area that between the dates of January 20th and February 22nd, their Department of Defense would be conducting tests, leaving the global positioning system unreliable or unavailable. The satellites and the report that came from them states that this DoD operation was in fact the removal of the pyramid-shaped structure discovered off of the coast of Florida a capstone believed to be one of the sources of these mysterious gamma ray bursts and remove it to the U.S. Army's Dugway Proving Grounds located in Utah. Basically, they're saying that they have found Atlantis, removed this capstone, and a gamma ray burst came from it. It's really, really wild. There are some images there showing you exactly where this was, where it happened at. I just thought it was interesting that there are several different reasons for why this base went on lockdown, and one of them being a gamma ray burst from Atlantis going out towards the Sirius star system. Well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of Guardian.co.uk, and apparently Caligula's tomb has been found after police arrest a man trying to smuggle a statue. Police arrested a tomb raider loading part of a 2.5-meter statue into a lorry near Lake Nemi, south of Rome, where Caligula had a villa. The lost tomb of Caligula, supposedly according to Italian police, has been found after the man tried to smuggle the statue. After reportedly sleeping with his sisters, killing for pleasure, and seeking to appoint his horse a consul during his rule from AD 37 to 41, Caligula was described as being insane by his contemporaries, with many of Caligula's monuments destroyed after he was killed by his Praetorian guard at age of 28. Archaeologists are eager to excavate for his remains. The emperor had a villa there where the man was stealing the statue, as well as floating temple and a floating palace. The statue that the man was stealing is estimated to be worth 1 million euros. Its rare Greek marble throne and god's robes convinced the police that it came from Caligula's tomb. After questioning the tomb raider, that led them to believe that this really was Caligula's tomb. I just thought it was really interesting. I mean, there are certain things that I grew up with, such as hearing about Caligula, that really, you know, were hard to believe as being true, but now they're supposedly they've found his tomb, and I really want to know what it is that they find. There's nothing more to this article there. If anybody else knows about it, please let me know. I'd love to hear about whether or not, you know, they actually are going to excavate it and what it is that they found. Now, the next article that I want to take a look at is courtesy of dailymail.co.uk again, and it's 2,000 Years of Loyalty. An Iron Age dog has been unearthed guarding an ancient treasure. He's lain underground for over 2,000 years, loyally doing his duty. But now archaeologists have unearthed the skeleton of what is believed to be Britain's oldest guard dog, which was sacrificed to protect a hoard of buried treasure. The skeleton of the dog, which is about the same size as a retriever, was discovered at the site of one of Britain's most important Iron Age excavations. It's believed an ancient tribe, the Coryell Tavi, which I probably completely butchered that again, who lived in Britain before the Roman conquest, killed, then buried the dog between AD 1 and AD 50 so its spirit could protect the stockpile. The find suggests that man's best friend has long been regarded as a protector and guardian. The dog's skeleton will now go on display at a museum along with the treasure and will be positioned in a glass case at the entrance of the exhibit so it can continue to stand guard. The dog was discovered in a pit at the Hollaton Treasure Site in Leicestershire. I think I said that right, not sure, which became Britain's largest find of Iron Age coins when it was excavated in 2000. The dog's story is yet another intriguing aspect of this nationally important find and illustrates the special relationship between humans and dogs that has existed for thousands of years. There's a little bit more to this article there that you can go and take a look at, and there's actually pictures of some coins and some iron stuff that they found in this site that they're excavating, but there's also a picture there of the dog itself. I have a couple of dogs myself, and I do know that they are very, very loyal. There's a picture there that's maybe kind of a painting or an artist's rendition of what this dog would have looked like at the time. It's just really interesting to know, you know, that people have a belief that you can protect and bring stuff with you in the afterlife from this world. And to know that they would kill this dog and put it there so it could protect this stuff for eternity is just, it's really wild, and I love hearing about stuff like this. Not the fact that they killed the dog, but the belief that the dog will continue to go on after this life. It's really interesting. This next thing that I wanted to take a listen to was, now, just to give you some heads up here as to what we're talking about with this, There have been just a spate of animals dying off this year. Now, it's only February of 2011, and there's been thousands of fish, birds, crabs, you name it, dying all over the place. Well, there were a large number of birds that fell in Arkansas that, at the time when they fell, the weather radar picked up an anomaly on there that was rather strange. And I wanted to go ahead and take a listen to the report that came from the station that saw this on the radar.
Well, stories about dead birds in several parts of the world are still making headlines. The bird kill in Arkansas is on almost everyone's radar. No, literally, it actually shows up on radar. New at 10 tonight, THV's Lauren Clark joins us now to explain. Lauren?
Well, as today our own Ed Buckner pointed out, an interesting image from the radar screen taken New Year's Eve above Beebe when the birds fell. We took it to the National Weather Service in North Little Rock to see if they could give any more information about the spot.
There are some indications that we're picking up a non-precipitation target. Has some similarities to, say, like a collection of birds.
This radar image is from around 10 p.m. New Year's Eve. Science and Operations Officer at the National Weather Service, Chris Bonanno, tells us Arkansas had lots of busy weather that particular night, but nothing after sunset.
It's not uncommon to see actually birds on the radar, especially in the spring and the summertime.
He estimates this spot to be between 1,300 and 1,400 feet above ground and points out how it doesn't move as most clouds or rainstorms would.
When you see the higher reflectivities, that's indication of a stronger or higher energy being returned to the radar. And in weather instances, usually these higher reflectivities indicate very heavy rain or perhaps hail.
And the bright color is just too strong to blame it on bugs or smoke. But Arkansas Game and Fish officials say witnesses told them the birds were flying low that night, hitting everything from cars to mailboxes. So while we know what
it's not a precipitation occurring,
the National Weather Service cannot definitively say what it is.
The image that you're going to see that they're showing moves in a different direction than the clouds that are right by it in the radar. The clouds that are moving, or the precipitation, or whatever it is that they're picking up with the radar, is moving in a northeasterly fashion. Whereas this image that you'll see from where they're talking about the birds fell is moving in more of an easterly, or maybe even a slightly southeasterly pattern. It's moving perpendicular to the way everything else in the radar is moving, and it almost looks like a plume of some kind. It almost resembles a satellite image of smoke and ash coming out of a volcano, and it's really fast. It's really intense. It spreads out really quickly, and if it's at 1,500 feet, what would it be? It comes and goes really, really quickly. If it was a big flock of birds, I would think it would last for a little bit longer. It was really strange. I want you guys to go take a look at it and let me know what you think about the radar images of when the birds all died, whenever thousands of birds died on New Year's Eve. Now, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of ibtimes.com, and it's suggestions for a new protocol for calling ET. A team of three scientists recently wrote a paper suggesting that humans need to change protocols in order to have a message to possible aliens understood. Previous attempts at contacting aliens known as Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or METI, M-E-T-I, might be heard someday, but there is little hope that aliens will be able to decipher what the message is about. The first time humans tried signaling aliens was in 1974 from the Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico. The message was aimed at a globular cluster called M13, which is 25,000 light years away. That message consisted first of the numbers 1 through 10, then the atomic numbers of basic elements that made up DNA. If an alien continued to decode the message, it would see the number of nucleotides in DNA, a graphic of the double helix. Other attempts were made in 1999, 2001, and 2003. Radio messages sent from a tracking facility in Yevpatoria in the Ukraine, which had digital transmissions designed to be visible against background noise. Dimitra Autry, the lead author of the paper, writes that the problem is that all of these messages, especially the last one, depend on being picked up somehow by the creatures that share human senses. For example, a photographic message would make no sense to a creature without eyes. To better ensure that a message is understood, there needs to be a protocol. The protocol can be tested by involving the public in developing it, says the paper. One way to do it is via the website that allows people to encrypt a message while other users try to figure out what it is. Testing a message protocol this way can help determine how culturally biased, for example, a message is. It can also help the people transmitting the message see where improvement is needed. Even though there are no aliens, as of yet, to test the protocol on, a message that can be deciphered across cultural boundaries is a good way to start. Well, that is true. I mean, if we're able to decipher a message that another human being is sending out there that's encrypted, maybe there's a chance that an alien could decipher a message. That is, if they can even get the message to begin with. There's a big difference, technologically speaking. Even if there were intelligent beings out there, but they hadn't discovered radio signals or anything to be able to receive these messages, they would have to have something that would be physical if it's, you know, if they can't get anything understood through a digital way. A radio signal, you have to have a radio that's a receiver to be able to hear it. It picks up this transmission and it transfers it into an audible noise that you can hear, which is why you listen to the radio. You can hear it. You know, it travels through the air and you can hear it. But if they don't have the technology for that, then you're not going to be able to even connect with them at all, seeing as how they don't know that the message is there. Anyway, I just thought it was really interesting. Hopefully one of these days we actually can have communication with an extraterrestrial of some kind. It would be really quite a fascinating thing. It really would be. Now, this next thing that I want to take a look at is another YouTube video. It's a really strange thing. It's been covered on a couple of different shows, and it's video of some of the riots and stuff that's going on over in Egypt. Now, since this video was posted, Egypt has kicked out Hosni Mubarak, and the military is now in control, which I really hope that this is all best for the Egyptian people. I have no ill feelings towards the Egyptian people at all. I truly hope that this is a transition that will benefit them. I really do. To anybody out there who is in Egypt right now or who may be Egyptian, I feel for you guys in the sense that you're having to go through all of this. But at the same time, I really truly hope that it's something that will be beneficial for you. Now, this video, what you're going to see is, you know, people running around throwing Molotov cocktails, tanks running around, and then the camera is going to show an image of a whole group of people with a bunch of fire in the background. You'll see this greenish image in the group of people that's there, and it resembles a person on horseback, but it's like a phantom green image that looks like a ghost, and it moves with the camera as the camera pans. It actually moves a little bit faster than the camera pans, but it does move with the camera. So I'm thinking it's some kind of an artifact on the lens, something, you know, reflecting off of the lens of the camera that's causing this. But oddly enough, it truly does look as if it is a person on horseback. It's really quite strange. It's really quite creepy. It does look like a ghost. I have to say that. But I want you guys to go take a look at the video and let me know what you think. If you have any type of an explanation of it, let me know. I really don't have an explanation at this point. All right, well, the next article that I wanted to take a look at is courtesy of thehindu.com, and it's a black lava-like substance that has come out of the earth and has triggered a panic. Now, if I'm reading this right, I believe it's in India. A lava-like liquid substance erupted at Malkapuram village. A shepherd first noticed a strange odor and plants withering. The inquisitive shepherd alerted other villagers who came to find out the source of the bad odor and finally zeroed in on the field belonging to one farmer. At the field, the villagers found two deep holes from which lava-like, black-like substance erupted. Now, would this be oil? I mean, maybe they found oil. Scared at the strange phenomenon, the villagers alerted a geologist for studying the strange phenomenon. According to an eyewitness, fire, along with the black substance, erupted out of the earth's surface at two different points. Geologist Mohano Rao said that a disturbance in the earth had occurred after the earthquake in Thailand. The rock formations processed below the earth's surface had created gaps, resulting in a creation of a weak zone in the dolerite rocks. Explaining the phenomenon, Mohan Rao maintained that an inorganic compound solution had oozed out of the earth. The lava substance is being sent to a geological laboratory for a thorough study. There's nothing more to this article here, but I mean, to me, it almost sounds like lava, but at the same time, it almost sounds like oil. I mean, maybe they had come across some kind of a natural oil spout of some kind. I don't really know. All right, well, I hate to say, guys, but this is the last article for the regular version of the show. For all the rest of you who are signed up for the premium version of the show, there's quite a bit more coming to you. But this article is courtesy of AOLnews.com. 32% of Russians think that the sun revolves around the Earth. Does the sun revolve around the Earth? Is radioactivity a human invention? Did humans ever live side by side with dinosaurs? A surprising number of people in Russia answered those and other questions with a resounding yes. A survey published this week by the Russian Public Opinion Research Center targeted scientific superstitions among Russian citizens. With their country about to take bolder moves for a future in space, 32% of Russians dismissed the idea that the sun is the center of our solar system. It may just be that this is a widespread, common, popular view because that's the way it looks. In terms of what you need to know to make it through life, it may well be irrelevant, said James Oberg, an NBC News space consultant. A former 22-year career rocket scientist and one of the world's leading experts on American and Russian space exploration, Oberg feels that the survey answers depend on how they were asked, in addition to how people normally process information. In one survey question, 55% of Russians noted that they believe radioactivity is a human invention. As for the question about humans living during the age of the dinosaurs, 29% of Russian citizens thought this Flintstone scenario was quite logical. Most people pick things up obliquely, Oberg theorizes. They hear about something in the background while they're going from the kitchen to the bedroom. It's not likely they sit down and study a topic. They're just loaded with stories. And whatever stories are the most common or common in the mass media, they're just pick them up. Oberg doesn't think that the results of the survey, which questioned 1,600 people in January, represent the actual Russian education process of its population. The Russian poll also suggested that women are more likely than men to believe scientific superstitions. Very strange indeed. I would hate to think that people are just going to hear something and believe it's completely and utterly true. Now, I know that people do that, but it's kind of sad to know that they're actually going to do that. It's really quite strange to know that 32% of them believe that the sun revolves around the earth. Now, if you just look at the way things are, it does appear that the sun goes around the earth because it goes across the sky. It goes in what appears to be a geocentric orbit around the earth. It's really strange. But for all of you guys who are listening to the regular version of this show, I truly do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen. I hope you guys are doing great. For all of you who are going to be going on into the premium episode, we've got just a whole bunch of stuff coming to you. We're going to be taking a look at UFOs that are being blamed for dead fish in Colombia. We're going to be taking a look at how Russia is planning to go to Mars, a woman who supposedly gave birth to a lizard, a case of satanic killings, Genghis Khan was an earth-friendly killer, and two new geoglyphs are found in Nazca, along with strange footprints of three clawed toes. We got a lot more coming up in the premium episode. If you want, go to premium.the13skulls.com and you can sign up for it. $5 a month, you'll get 4 episodes a month, 2 extended versions and 2 regular versions of the show, which will be extended versions as well. So 4 extended versions for $5 a month. That's 1 episode a week for $5. You go to iTunes, you spend 99 cents on one song that lasts 3 minutes. In this case, you spend a little over a dollar, you get about an hour and a half or more of just straight content, good music, and you know, you'll be supporting this show and helping it continue on. So for all of you who are listening to the regular show, I really do appreciate you coming out and taking a listen to the show. Have a great day, night, week, weekend, whatever it is that you're listening to this, and I will talk to you guys again on another day. For the rest of you, stay put. We'll be back in just a minute.
Outside, the crowd is gathered.